Welcome to the Shutdown Full Cast. Do we have breaking news? We actually have breaking news, Jason, tonight. This would be Sunday after week six. That'd be October 7th, 2018. We have actual college football news.
We got breaking news. We go live to our correspondents, our men's coaches lifestyle blog, stuffcoacheslike.com. It's coaching news.
For men.
Breaking the important news that Oklahoma defensive coordinator Mike Stoops has been unfairly terminated. Coach was fired. It's a sad day for all in the profession. Our hearts go out to all affected coaches. However, this is also a great day because it means a new coach is getting a job.
That's true.
It's the great circle of coaching life for men.
Somebody wise. Somebody forthright, someone intelligent, someone who can lead.
Whichever rich man is given this great job, he'll deserve it. And Mike Stoops, it's sad. I don't know how he'll feed his family without the six-figure income that Oklahoma provides. Don't look up his buyout. It's shameful to bring up a buyout when a fellow coach has been fired.
How is one possibly capable of making ends meet in Norman, Oklahoma for just $950,000 a year?
It's just sinister what these schools do to these coaches, such as us, such as me and such as you. Mm-hmm. Holly, of course, is not a coach because she's not a man.
Nope.
No. She does the things that women do to support coaches, which is like raise children we don't remember the names of.
I make funeral potatoes and provide emotional support.
Yeah. And occasionally fix zone blitzes when they're asleep.
Shout out to Aaron and Funeral Potatoes Twitter. I see you.
Funeral Potatoes!
As always, when it comes to women, you can click on our site, stuffcoacheslike.com, for 10 laws for a coach's wife, written by a man.
Written by a...
Wait, is this real?
It's kinda.
It's stuffcoacheslike.com.
No,
it's our coaches lifestyle blog for men.
If this is real, you can't show me this ever.
No, we really can't.
Okay,
no.
You can't show me this. Do not at me with this. This can't be in my life.
Yeah, Mike Stoops is out. That's what you need.
Whoever replaces him is going to be worse at one thing.
Hmm.
Banging his knees on the tiny little school desk that they sit him in the booth. Every time he jumps out of his seat in rage, which is a lot.
There will be a noticeable downtick in hopping.
My favorite Jack in the Box.
There are a couple things about this. One, before we actually had a little bit of prep talk, like at least three minutes of prep talk about how we were going to talk about this. And one point I have seen, the trigger for this, by the way, as with all great changes at the University of Oklahoma, they lost to Texas.
Can't do that.
No. Actually, you can. You can do that in grandiose fashion. You can't do it to this Texas team. Because it's very hard to hide, right? Like, who's to blame here? Because Oklahoma, last year when Georgia beat Oklahoma, what was the general take that you thought when you watched those two teams? What was your thought about whether they belonged on the same field?
They did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think one sort of takeaway is that, well, gosh, if Oklahoma was like 1% better at defense, it probably would have had a 50-50 shot at a national title last year.
Yeah, because we're all pretty sure that Oklahoma offense would have put it on Alabama, right? Like,
I think
that's exactly
they would have
the
made Bama work for it, that's for sure.
That's the kind of offense that basically Alabama is designed like not to face. They don't want any piece of that because the very rare times when Alabama, our current football overlord, has actually lost in competition, they have lost to offenses much like Lincoln Riley's at Oklahoma.
You would have seen Tua get subbed in like 45 seconds. It's like, oh,
we're
fuck.
Down 21-0.
Can I say something nice about Bama?
Yeah.
I really admire, and this is not sarcasm, it's something that I aspire to myself and have not been able to satisfactorily arrange in my own life. I deeply admire their commitment to just not doing shit they don't want to do.
It's true. It's true. They're like, we have to play offense. Fine. Yeah.
Or, you know, like, it's something I admire in other teams I'm supposed to dislike. Like Florida, for example. No, we're not leaving the state. It's cold.
Yeah. Or this, Alabama with kickers. Ain't recruiting one.
No. Shan't.
Yeah. Don't you guys need to really devote a scholarship to a kick? Nah.
We do not.
Nah. It's not like a billionaire doesn't own belts. What happens if my pants fall down? Just buy a new pair.
And yeah, like, I mean, if you really run it back, we did a post a few months ago about like, for all the jokes about Bama kickers, can you name all the games they've lost because of kickers? Well, there's the one, and...
And then there's a bunch of jokes and games that were really just at the most incidental to their overall performance, right? Like, ha-ha, they missed a kick in a game they won by 23.
Right. Like, this year, their kicking is horrible. They've missed, I think, it would barely be an exaggeration to say Bama's missed a kick every game this year. Which, granted, they score a fucking lot of touchdowns, so... Nobody's perfect, but
gonna say that's pole pimping to worry about,
I mean,
field goals
if
you're Bama.
One kind of scoring, I'm glad they fixed that kind. Those poor downtrodden offenses.
Yeah,
of Tuscaloosa.
But generally, yeah, I think Jason's getting to the point I really unfairly set him up to illustrate, which is if Oklahoma were, you know, 3% better on defense, they would have won that game against Georgia, or that whenever Oklahoma's had a significant failing, it hasn't been with the offense. No, it's been like this. If I told you, hey, man, we scored 48 points, you should probably win that game, right? Nah, because Georgia beat Oklahoma 54-48. Or if I go, well, you know, we should, you know, like if you score 42 points, you know, you should be able to win that game. And, or 45 points. And you know what? Oklahoma did score 45 points on Texas. Texas, you know, came in and they scored 48 points. Does anyone recall what their average was on the season points-wise?
Not quite that.
Nah, it was like 28.
Yeah.
27, 28 points.
That's
somewhere
less.
In there.
That is less.
Mm-hmm. That's less.
It say a bunch of like 220-pounders come in and try to run 10-minute drives on you and Norman. Can you get them off the field? Maybe one out of like five tries, or do they just get to just march, just let the troops march up and down the field?
Yeah, that's, you don't go to overtime against Army and Norman, right? If everything is okay. Additionally, like, there are a lot of sort of negatives here and a lot of like holdouts and from the Stoops era that are probably now just sort of unfolding, that Lincoln took over and he's like, I can't fire Bob's brother. Lincoln's been there a minute. If you want to know the exact moment at which Lincoln Riley felt like he could fire Bob's brother and the program was his, that'd be Sunday, October 7th, 2018. Man, probably around like 7 p.m. when he's like, yeah, we talked to the lawyers.
Did he have a timer?
Yeah, I bet he did. He's like, a coach. Come on.
Yeah. Lincoln's not stupid.
Yeah. He probably did the math and he was like, via this equation, I can't fire you till games equal X plus Y time, right?
Until the points meter fills up.
Yeah.
And it was a big meter.
Now, just to bring this discussion about Oklahoma football back where it belongs to the SEC, you realize that Mike is just going to go crying to Mark now, so maybe we'll have Kentucky taking care of us before, you know, we have to worry about them too much more.
Kentucky games go from like 28 total points in regulation to but Kentucky keeps using the same offense. Like,
the Big 12 just erupted in Lexington. It's crazy.
Kentucky's in a damn single wing shootout. Dangest thing I've ever seen.
I would kind of love to see this, and I'm not joking.
Yeah, I mean, if we just,
I would find this massively entertaining.
If you just go back and overall acumen, let me just remind you, like, you know, Arizona had Rob Gronkowski and Nick Foles. Mike Stoops still had a losing record there. Like,
that was not a climate that was well suited for his complexion.
That's no. What am I going to remember most about the Mike Stoops era, though, besides him making $950,000 a year to allow 48 points to a demonstrably mediocre Texas offense?
His
what?
Enduring pinkness of skin.
That, and they could never figure out where to put him.
Always. Man, he looked and acted like a boiled baby at all times.
He did. And if they put him on the sidelines, like, he was hopping around uncontrollably, and then they'd move him up to the booth because, you know, he could see things better up there. Reader, he could not.
Do you remember my idea that we had while watching this game?
Mm.
Which was to put him in a dunk tank on the sidelines?
Oh, yeah.
Just if they allowed a touchdown. Now into the dunk tank. There
he'll
it goes.
Never learn.
You know? And it's not like
he's so goddamn mad the whole all the water just steams out.
He needs to find some way to channel this emotion towards his job and not towards yelling. Like if he took all that energy that he's expending through his mouth and put it to work inside his head instead. I'm not a scientist or a doctor, but men don't need those.
Now, this is just like an internally screaming meme. Just like take all that screaming and point it inside your own brain.
Yeah.
I'm just picturing
bottle
Mike Stoops'
emotions,
face
Mike,
not
like
moving.
A, like a man.
Like a coach.
Up, bury it all deep down.
Bottle it up, tamp it down, and let it all come flying out at an inopportune moment brought on by a largely unrelated trigger.
Let it all fester and take it out in the voting booth on the libs.
That's right. I feel bad about the Oklahoma defense. That's why I'm going to vote to believe that global warming isn't real. Which it's not.
I think America should have a generalissimo.
And he should be a coach. The coach of America, so to speak.
Have I said on this program before that I believe women should only be allowed to drive buggies and then only when they're topless?
You said that.
I definitely did.
Yeah.
Grocery buggies, to be specific.
No, I mean like horse and buggies.
Horse and buggies at the grocery store while they're picking me up a 12-pack.
Well, all the horses have to be male. Those are their supervising horses.
The only part of this law I'm remotely okay with is the idea that any kind of buggy is the only preferred vehicle, period. Dune buggies. But we don't really, there's not enough dune buggies on the road, period. Okay. I think people should wear whatever manner of dress they want to while they're driving their dune buggy, but still.
I mean, technically, this is a nude dune buggying law. I think we can all get on board with nude dune buggying.
And you know what? Do you hate freedom?
This is one
I'm
where,
sorry.
Like, it came from a bad place. Like, it came from stuffcoachslike.com, which is just a terrible cesspool of bad opinions. But once you throw out, let's all dune buggy naked, I'm like, okay, stuffcoachslike.com.
Yeah, seriously, is this a real website?
It will be.
Okay.
We're about to.
Y'all scared me.
The launch is, we got to get Mike Stoops a job.
Yeah.
God, how are they going to eat? I mean,
he can't eat these touchdowns. They're already spoiled.
Yardage. My children can't live on yardage. They can't. They're going to feel pressure like a defensive end who never arrives on a pass rush.
We got to bring him some bags of food because he doesn't have any sacks.
Yeah.
It sounds like we're hating just because we haven't figured out how to be that bad at our jobs while making that much money. You're absolutely right.
That's correct. That's it. Or to have our brother be way better at our jobs than we are.
Man, I still think the best Stoops, the best Stoops brother gig is, what's his name, Ron? The one who's at the high school?
Yeah. That's the one you want, man. Just chill and be like the Stoops who's like, no, I'm committed to football.
He's got their dad's job, right? That's their dad's old team.
Yeah, and it's like, I'm committed to football at the purest level, high school. Yeah, man.
Also, you know you never have to host Thanksgiving because everybody else got a nicer house than you. It's no pressure lifestyle, and you still get to be around football.
Yeah. So, just going back, in case you wonder whether the Red River shootout still matters or not, I don't know. Got the brother of your most successful coach in modern history fired. Ta-da! I count modern as back to Barry Switzer. Barry Switzer is an ancestral figure like Abraham.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I think modern is fair. Modern is.
Yeah. But that rivalry, just in case you wonder whether you can still get fired over a rivalry game, hell yes, son. You can get fired. We can talk about that game, too, if you want, because if you look at it, then yeah, you would have fired somebody if you were Oklahoma.
Actually, what would have been really funny is if Texas had won that game and Texas A&M had fired somebody. Not that they're rivals. That's why it would have been funny. The joke is that they're not rivals, and they don't cry themselves to sleep at night thinking about each other's arms.
Texas makes the playoff, and they fire Jimbo on sight. Just
just because we – not because
you
of Texas.
You turn your ass right back around.
We'll pay you $75 million. We'll pay the next man $75 million after four games if we don't like it.
This is going to sound like overly facile even for this program, but it didn't really hit me until Saturday that Jimbo is an SEC coach now and all the bullshit cult of personality that goes with it.
Oh, look where he is, too.
Yeah, man. There was something about Saturday that really drove that home for me that I hadn't really absorbed before for some reason.
That and struggling to a late win over Kentucky.
That was probably what did it, yeah.
Yeah. That's probably when you're like, you're real SEC, because you go...
Because you're struggling against
Kentucky. Because you're struggling.
You're down here with the rest of us.
Oh, goddamn. I also enjoy that in Texas and Oklahoma, right? First of all, Mike Stoops will probably get hired by Texas A&M as a consultant just on theory, right?
Just in case we play the Longhorns.
Yeah, just in principle. They're like, well,
not that we ever would.
Oklahoma fired him because something Texas did. Oh no, let's hire him for $500K a year to just sit there.
Just to make if I had the money, and Lord knows they have the money, I would do this just on the off chance that it might make someone I didn't like nervous.
Absolutely, like, oh, they've got our plays.
What's he doing? Oh, we gave him a Jeffy Bowden fellowship. He's just playing Fortnite.
I bet Jeff Bowden's a badass Fortnite player.
Well, he's got to be good at something.
The points total is one thing. Texas came into this game being a fairly pedestrian offense. Yeah. Do you want to know Sam Ellinger? Have you seen Sam Ellinger pass the ball?
Not many times, no.
Tebow-ish.
Yeah.
Little Tebow-ish with the touch.
He's a little timid.
If you will. That's good.
Thank you.
Sam Ellinger, not exactly the most polished passer in the world. Against Oklahoma, Sam Ellinger was a second coming of Aaron Rodgers. He passed for 314 yards and 2 TDs. I bet that is the best total that they get all year, which is, again, sort of a thing with Mike Stoops, that if you look back and go, man, that guy had a great game that game. Look who they played.
Yeah. He's just making young men's careers. And I think that's honorable. Just giving these young men special, special memories.
A molder of men.
The best day of my life involved Mike Stoops. You hear that a lot.
Additionally, I think when you come back and you score 28 points in the second half to play yourself back into a game where you were down substantially, your coach / de facto offensive coordinator, he's going to have a little, he's going to be a little bitter about how that went, man. He's going to have feelings about it, about how you helped him squander that lead in losing to only your most bitter rival, historically speaking. Yeah. Yeah. This was happening for a while.
Like, here's how bad Mike Stoops is. I had gone ahead and in the weekly bowl projections, I had taken Oklahoma out. I didn't have him in the playoff last week, and sure as shit, didn't this week. But as soon as I saw Mike Stoops is out, I'm like, let's see here. Let's see how we can get the Sooners back in this thing. Because, they got Ruffin McNeil's on staff. Right? He could surely...
He's a pretty good coach.
Yeah. I mean, look, ECU fell apart without him. I'm sure he could handle things. They got Bob Diaco. He could be sort of a motivation consultant, if you need a rivalry trophy with Iowa State or something.
They should put Bob Diaco. Ooh. I got to think about this for a minute. Would it be worth it just to have Bob Diaco in the office with the video guys, like just creating trophy memes?
Because
now that we know how much it irritates people to have a one-sided trophy, just have that be his thing.
Just make them up for different teams and leave them wherever they go. It's yours! No, it's not. It's the kind of thing where I go, wow. Ruffin McNeil, I know that Ruffin McNeil was a DC at Texas Tech, and Ruffin McNeil was a good head coach at East Carolina, and had a winning record. And yeah, East
Carolina will be cursed forever for letting him go, as rightly fucking they should be.
Yeah, yeah, yep, 100%. And yeah, this is addition by subtraction for Oklahoma. Also, Ruffin McNeil and whoever else is going to help him resurrect the defense at Oklahoma, they probably won't have former players chiming in on Twitter to go, yeah, his schemes are trash.
Was it Tony Jefferson? Is that the one?
That's one of them, yeah. That's multiple players.
Yeah, I think the big, big example was against Baylor, I think 2 or 3 years ago, when Oklahoma was playing. I mean, it looked like some shit that if somebody did it to you in Madden, you'd be like, seriously, bro, are you trying to... What's happening here? Like, the corners were playing a solid 10 to 15 yards off the line. I'm barely exaggerating. And Baylor's just eating them up underneath and just kept refusing to scoot the guys in at all. It was like the most... It was the kind of thing where it's so bad that even you as an amateur sitting on the couch, you're like, I literally could be doing a better job than this right now. And I'm not even joking.
I adore that Tony Jefferson, by the way, kept tweeting about it and kept going despite his former coaches trashing him, not only prior to the combine, but afterwards. And Tony Jefferson at one point tweets out, Coach Venables, that'd be Brett Venables over at Clemson, former OU defensive coordinator, again, proving he's the best defensive coordinator in the NCAA. There's no question. Wish he never left OU.
I bet that's a pretty common sentiment.
But yeah, like when you have former players pointing out basic like structural things, like you probably don't want one guy covering an entire half of the field by himself against three receivers. Just a thought. Just a thought.
I would say they should let the players coach defense, but then they'd have to pay them.
$950,000.
Yeah.
But a Mike Stoops just doesn't come along every day.
Yeah. Thank God.
I have another thing to discuss that I'm not quite ready for, but I have to address it.
Is this about you beat LSU and you have to shut up about your fine, totally fine coach for a little bit?
Yeah! Yeah, I don't know what to do! I don't know how to handle this!
Yeah, we know.
I can't feel my hands! I can't feel my face! It wasn't...
I love that even in defeating LSU, you frame it as a personal struggle that makes your life harder.
It doesn't. That's the part that I'm struggling with. The difficulty I'm having is a lack of difficulty here.
I mean, you're acting like Florida has just been like completely downtrodden ass off the map for decades. When were you last number 15? I bet it was in the last, what, 4 years? Something like that.
2014.
Pumpkin.
You poor thing.
Something like that. Hey, listen. I'm not telling you.
No, you don't know the meaning of suffering.
So you were number 8 in 2015.
We should
at one point on Saturday, you were bellyaching about some tiny fucking thing, and I looked at you, and I was trying to boil down my argument to the essential component parts, and I think what I landed on was just yelling, it's stupid for you to feel bad.
This team finished number 14 2 years ago. This is normal. Florida's always been fine. You've had two terrible years in the last my lifetime.
Now, Jason, we do have to remember that as a young football program,
one that just started in 1990,
not even 30 years old.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That they haven't experienced life like those of us in our 30s.
I mean, we didn't hire Derek Dooley.
Spencer, of course, is much older than Florida football.
That's true. I came along as a babe in arms and had an entire life before Florida football actually came to being in 1990. But still,
hey, speaking of young programs, your Plankonia Owls are going to be number 2 in FCS now. Number 2.
Ooh, one program in the state of Georgia.
Yeah, how did Kennesaw State do?
Man, I'll tell you what. Y'all have got to get on this mode. We are in the shittiest conference, and it has like 5 teams. Mm-hmm. We just annihilate each of them and then play like D2 schools and annihilate them too. It's awesome, man. It like the shit is like 49-3 every week. We got the next week will be favored by like 37. It's awesome. And the, and like other fans are like, y'all don't play anybody. And it's like, this doesn't matter to me at all. There's conference auto bid. We beat 5 shitty teams and we go to the playoff. You can say nothing to me that's going to harm my like strength of schedule manhood.
It's like the Big Ten weather quibbler. No, this comes back to what I was saying about Alabama. Y'all don't do things you don't want to do, and I admire that.
Yeah, we don't want to play nobody.
Yeah, and you're just sitting there punting gerbils off a bridge. Yeah, watch this gerbil fly.
It's too good, and gerbils suck. Yeah,
it's like you know, in when you're playing NCAA, the fun thing is like I'm going to take over. You know, I'm going to take over Mitsu and I'm going to put him in the SEC West and we're going to try to win a national title in 5 years. This is the opposite. This is when you like create a conference that's like you and 3 Mitsus and that's it.
Oh, so the Big 12. It's basically the Big 12. That's awesome. You're like a bargain Texas fan.
We have fun here.
That's awesome. No, I should get more on the Plankonia thing, but I have no complaint.
But I'm too busy belly aching.
I'm not belly.
Being a
no, I.
Fan knowing the meaning of suffering.
I'm saying we can get off the oh poor me stuff and just say hey we're all fans of good teams here.
I'm
man. If you're gonna feel sorry for somebody, feel sorry for Ryan.
That's true.
What's Ryan. What's his problem? Oh, he's sick. Is that what we're talking about?
He's not on the full cast tonight because I believe that he's having a war. It like an anatomically speaking, there's a war in the trenches.
Yeah, yeah.
For Ryan, it's between his immune system and a hard charging viral defensive line working its way through his lower quarter.
Ew. Why are you like?
Yes, Ryan is unwell.
Ryan's not well.
He'll be fine.
Ryan's not.
He'll be
fine. Yeah, he's not. If you're not well enough to podcast on this podcast, you're really not well. That's what I'm saying. If there were a podcast that could be done from the toilet, it would be this one.
Don't tell me you've never done this.
I can't say for sure, but I don't think it's happened.
Have you ever done a radio hit from the toilet?
Yes.
I mean, you can do that like on your cell phone, so
yeah.
You can do that shit anywhere.
Yeah, that's you don't want to know the number of brilliant blogs written, you know, on the John.
So you're calling Ryan a quitter.
Not in this case. I'm saying that if he can't actually do that, then it must be bad, right?
Yeah.
It's got to be terrible. But speaking of teams that shit the bed.
God, Jesus,
listen, Ryan may have had some sort of a defecatory issue today. We cannot confirm that he actually shit a bed.
We'll just go ahead and say he did. That's fine.
Our special boy's pooping, y'all.
We're now assuming that Ryan has shit a bed.
Yeah, but...
Does he still have to put the podcast together?
I don't know.
I think
Let's hope he doesn't
listen
to it.
That's the sad part.
It would be... He'd be a fool to listen to it.
Folks, when you hear this, remember to tweet at Ryan at 38Godfrey about shitting the bed.
Yes. But speaking of teams... I shat the bed this weekend, which overall this weekend was, Jason, I thought you thought it was kind of, you described it as being kind of like a low key boring.
It was a fake blood week. It was like a Hollywood blood, you know, it was like wrestling blood, you know?
Yeah. Like all the major characters survived.
Like we've come up with this term for like the weekend of the season. We call it blood week. And this was like, oh, I bladed my forehead. So it looked like,
this was like True Blood week.
Right. This was blood capsule week. Like, yes, I think it was 7 or 8 top 25 teams lost, 5 top 14 teams lost to lesser ranked teams, but not a single one was shocking. Like, okay, Michigan State lost a ugly, gross, close game against like shadow Michigan State, which is Northwestern.
But, like, even that was characteristic of Michigan State losses.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, that's what I'm saying. You know,
they lost a game in Michigan State fashion.
Yeah, like, oh, it's Oklahoma State lost a weird shootout. Never seen that before, you know?
Yeah, or,
Auburn couldn't score any points. I can't believe it.
Yeah, what in an it's an off year. It's a Fire Gus year, right?
I also feel like this was like the second, maybe the third week in a row when it felt like there were about two-thirds the number of games that there should be. Like half the country's on a bye or something.
We got teams just sneaking through the season, not playing the damn games. We're gonna look up West Virginia's gonna be in the playoff at 4-0.
It's about personal responsibility.
Y'all need to start fulfilling these commitments. We didn't rent out the stadium. Just if you did not show up.
We actually did rent out the stadium to own the Libs.
Actually, and there are a couple of teams that even I think got fake threatened along the way, right? Like Alabama gave up some crazy total of points and yardage to
failed to
Arkansas.
Cover. Third week in a row, Bama failed to cover.
Yeah, it was a sign. They're weak.
They're quitters.
Now's the time to strike. Whoever's
next.
Wait,
look at their schedule.
Yeah, now's the time to strike.
Now's the time to strike. ULM.
Auburn. Yeah, no. It's not. Yeah, it's not happening. Yeah, like there were teams that did fake bleeding like that. Notre Dame, for a minute, struggled with Virginia Tech before hitting the afterburners, right? There was a lot of that.
Ohio State played Indiana, and you know exactly how that goes every year.
Indiana
we got
going
on the ropes, boys. Aww.
Oh. Like George Foreman against Ali. Like, I hit him as hard as I could. And Ali says, "Is that all you got, George?" And George was like, "Yep, that's all I got."
It's kind of like one that's of it. George's many sons named George against Ali.
Yeah, Georgetta.
Just wailing.
Yeah, Indiana ran out of Indiana. Indiana only has so much Indiana to compete with that much Ohio State. And turns out Ohio State has a lot more Ohio State. Even though they did keep giving up big plays, that's all Greg Schiano's defense does, is give up big plays, big NFL-type plays, and an NFL-type defense to college coordinators. And players who won't even touch the CFL. That's all Ohio State does.
Big professional. Like, Greg Schiano was watching, like, NFL matchup, like, after he'd been up for 4 hours at 6:30 a.m. And he's like, the NFL thing now is giving up lots of big plays. Okay.
I can do that. That's huge. Look at these people who play the Chiefs. They're all giving up huge plays.
Actually, he doesn't talk like that. He's got, like, that really raspy voice. Anyway, I'm sure we'll have plenty more chances to talk about Greg Schiano this season.
That's it. Well, Mike Stoops just got fired, didn't he?
So guess who's next up, brother?
Yeah, who's the next defensive coordinator under major scrutiny? I imagine everyone in Ohio will be real patient with him because he's got big traps and tucks his shirt in.
No, that just makes him family, and you'd expect more.
Yeah, he's a cultural fit.
Yeah, he is a cult. Yeah, cultural. He's white. Yeah, Graciano's white.
He's a big, weird guy who likes diseases.
Yeah. We like diseases. He seems like he does things the right way. Yeah. He's a one-man CDC consultant.
It makes it sound like a scientist, yeah. Greg Schiano's Petri dish.
I adore this Ohio State team for that, though, because they have this absolutely overrated meathead of a coach. Who, yes, was martyred by people unfairly robbing the Tennessee job from him. Doing people a favor both ways, okay? That's what that was, all right?
My team was on bye this week. We don't have to say shit.
That's right.
Well, and yeah. My other team
back
sucked the life out of me in Kansas. So.
Back in the days when people didn't get jobs they wanted because of allegations in their past.
Topical.
With that, by the way, Tennessee doesn't have a bye week next week. They play Auburn, and I'm here to tell you something. No, I'm here to plant. I'm just here to like stake this ground early.
Why are you like this?
They're gonna beat Auburn.
I hate you so goddamn.
They're gonna. I don't think that's a compliment to either team.
Stop.
They're
that.
Just gonna beat Auburn.
Stop it. No.
Because we originally started this segment talking about teams that were going to shit
if
the bed.
If newspaper still existed, I would roll one up and hit you on the nose with it.
Well, you'd hit me unlike anyone on the Auburn offense aiming for me because Auburn's sick. They are infirm.
This was the my favorite opening line of the week. Auburn opened as a 20-point favorite against Tennessee, and everyone immediately was like, Auburn scoring 20 they points?
Score, they won't that, score 20.
Yeah, there won't be 20 points. That line immediately plummeted.
Yeah, because let's just put it this way, okay? Nick Fitzgerald passed for 69 yards.
Nice.
Thank you. He passed for 69 yards because I don't know what Joe Moorhead is demanding of his quarterback, but at one point in the whole process in Starkville, Joe Moorhead was like, listen, Nick, just don't worry about passing, bro.
Yeah.
Don't we're just running a single wing. It's fine. Which is fine because they ran for 349 yards on Auburn. And in response, Auburn ran for 90. 90.
90.
In the run first, hurry up, no huddle, single wing attack that Gus Malzahn so adores and was so vaunted and respected for bringing into the game. And at one point worked really well. At this point, it's basically just asking Jarrett Stidham to throw the ball 40 times a game for like 5 yards a pop. That's where they're at. They lost 23-9 to Mississippi State, and it was never really in doubt, y'all. Auburn is infirm. They are ill. They have taken sick. They are abed and need assistance.
Well, at least Gus Malzahn has a $30 million buyout.
I enjoy people who chimed in, and I was like, yeah, man, you know, this is a fire Gus year, and people are like, they won't fire Gus. Are you unfamiliar with the Malzahn cycle? Are you unfamiliar that there's good Gus and bad Gus? Alternates years. That's it. We're clearly in a bad Gus here. Are they going to fire him? They're going to want to. Do they have the money? No, they don't have the money. You think they're Texas A&M?
A&M might loan it. Just to show that they have it.
Oh, man.
We're funding
it. There's an A&M tactic I had not thought of.
Man. That should be an Alabama tactic where they loan them the money and then foreclose on Auburn.
I think that the A&M maneuver is just to say, hey, Aggies, I bet you don't have $35 million. Huh? Of course we do. Here you go. I only want it.
Every fucking time.
You're poor if you don't buy this car for me, Dad.
Huh? Okay.
Show you. I ain't poor.
How dare you?
Then they hire Jimbo to coach Auburn. Yeah, hell yeah.
Which is where he wanted to go.
We'll make money on this.
That's where he wanted to go anyway.
He's really home now. That's his true family. Yeah, Auburn's terrible, y'all. Like, I didn't think they'd be this bad.
Not in any of the usual ways on the inside, but on the outside where the football is.
No. Their body's sick. Like, we might complain about the moral complexities of being an Auburn fan, but no, this is a physical disease. This is one if we can't run the ball, and we're relying on Jarrett Stidham to control our offense. And it turns out Jarrett Stidham is not Cam Newton.
Well, he might be Cam Newton. It's an ongoing investigation.
We'll be investigating that one a while.
Yeah, it'll be a minute.
I mean, like, Auburn should be good at one thing. If it's bad at everything, it should be good at one thing. Running the goddamn ball. And
yeah.
Auburn is terrible at that.
Yeah, this is an off, like a seriously off-brand Auburn team.
It's Auburn.
It's a Texas Tech that can't throw. It's an Iowa that can't punt. This is, what do you have? What do you have to offer the world, Auburn?
Yeah. Step up, Auburn. Bring something to the party. At least, you know, bring snacks. That would be it. If you were leading the SEC in snacks, I'd really appreciate that. Not just chips and dips. That's just a bag and a carton you buy at the store.
I bet Gus cuts an extremely precise orange slice.
I bet he does, too. And then I bet he really worries about it. How could I cut that enough?
Who leads the SEC in snacks?
Oh, LSU.
But yeah,
that's more meals, right?
That's whole meals, man. If I was going to go, like, when I think about what do you think of as good snacks, you know, like dips and various chips and, like, little snacky fried things.
Georgia, because they're suburban like that.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. LSU still got some solid snacks, y'all. I mean, you know, and that's beyond just the normal sort of pork rinds and boudin balls, you know, like.
All their snacks are, like, nap-inducing, though.
That's true. It's heavy. I'll let you go with Georgia. That's good. You know, if no, I was...
You were talking a few weeks ago about how their superpower is making every space into a comfortable suburban living room, and that just seems like it comes with cheese straws.
That's true. Although, you know what? If I'm going to go with snacks, like just on a fan base in the SEC, Vanderbilt, you know why? They go to the nice grocery store that specializes in overpriced snacks,
they
right?
They just get a picnic basket.
Yeah, they do. They just grab a picnic basket because they don't actually like engage with life. They just buy packages.
Quince paste.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, oh man, you guys got pate. I could eat it with a Dorito and no one would blink because you're all, you know, you'd be like, no, we're still of the soil.
Interesting use of the subjunctive there.
Hmm. Isn't it though? Yeah. By the way, Vandy, I want everyone who goes to SEC Media Days next year and goes, I think Derek Mason has this program going in the right place. I've said this before. Let me say this again. Y'all are getting suckered.
That's fun, though.
Absolutely suckered. It's fun. And Derek Mason is cool. But you know what? It's still Vanderbilt. He's not James Franklin. They lost 41-13 to Vandy.
There's an argument.
Or lost to Georgia.
James Franklin wasn't James Franklin.
There's a real good argument. Yeah. But, yeah, they lost 41-13. Didn't even put up a fight. That's it. Like, the most notable achievement of the Derek Mason Vanderbilt era is being the team that said we wanted Bama and then proved very much that you do not want Bama.
That was fun, man. That's the kind of Vanderbilt team I want.
Yeah, that was Vandy contributing in the best possible way.
Okay,
remember that Florida Vanderbilt game where they were like, four onside kicks and we're back in this thing?
Yeah, you don't want...
This is the Vandy I want.
That's the Vandy you want. It's the one that opponents want. It's never good when your opponents or opposing fans or even disinterested observers are like, yeah, give that guy an extension. We'd love to see more of that.
That was entertaining. Speaking of things that outside observers enjoy but that no one actually emotionally invested did, can we talk about the game of the week?
Which was?
South Carolina. 37, Missouri 35, which we arrived at in the most insane fashion possible.
I watched this game today.
On purpose.
On purpose. And rewatched it. So I'm just going to list, go with me and just list all of the things that happened in this game. I'm going to start with, the first thing that I noticed in this game, which would be that there was a monsoon in the third quarter. Like a full-on hurricane that only lasted for the quarter.
Yeah, there was that. And not just regular weather. It was hammering the stadium so hard that the scoreboard stopped working.
They didn't have a clock.
ESPN's clock stopped working. The ESPN's cameras, they were stuck on like the stationary cam from super far away where it looks like a side-scrolling video game where you advance to the next room. You're like, oh, Mizzou completes a 30-yard pass. Let's go to the next camera. Wow, they're still going, you know? There was, at one point, my favorite, like, 30 seconds of this game was ESPN was doing a shot of Steve Spurrier's name on the Ring of Honor. Water is pouring out of the middle of his name. Like, Coach Dunn sprung a leak. You had that, and then you went straight to a ref saying, Missouri's headsets are not working. there was a weird pick six where like Mizzou player fell down, was not there. It looked like a pass directly from Drew Locke to a South Carolina player. Sure, there's huge splashy puddles everywhere, then there's a long delay. At one point, there was lots and lots and lots and lots of weird special teams in this game. There was an accidental onside kick on the second drive.
Jason, when you say accidental onside kick for our viewers who perhaps did not partake, who inexplicably did not partake of this game.
Yeah, it was a shanked kickoff that they asked Barry Odom about it, like, why'd you do that? And he said, well, no, we did not call an onside kick. It was, and this was before the rain showed up. Like, the special teams got worse from there. This was,
I believe, the first Mizzou kickoff, was it not?
Yeah, this was near the very start of the game.
Where everyone else is running forward and the guy, like, boots an onside, he goes to the sideline. And honestly, the special teams coach didn't even look angry. He just pulled him over to the side and was like, "What? What? Like, just
we'll get him next
explain
time.
It to me." And the best part is I watched that, went back and rewound. And 5 minutes later, the special teams coach is looking at him going, "Okay, no, it's okay. It's okay. Listen, this happens. It's okay. We got to do this again in 2 minutes.
No, this doesn't happen."
Yeah, no, but like you could tell that his reaction had elicited a response from the kicker so disturbing and world changing that he had to be like, no, we're going to get through this. Everything you just did, it's cool. We're just going to just go out and kick the ball, bud. Just go ahead and kick the ball.
So Bill Conley helped put together a post that was like one section of it just running down the weird special teams. One was there was a 70-yard touchdown run that was called back by the, it kind of stepped out of bounds, but it was like, come on, it's whatever. It's like it was a very picky reversal, and then immediately there's a whole bunch of penalties and a like botched punt, and like everything just kept getting worse and worse and worse. There was like missed field goals, a block punt, like all just the full assortment of special teams gaffes. But the best part on the field was that 70-yard touchdown that was called back. ESPN scoreboard showed it as a South Carolina touchdown. It was a Mizzou touchdown, and immediately ESPN scoreboard just gave 6 to South Carolina.
That was sweet.
But then that was called back. Mizzou's 6 was added on, and then Mizzou's 6 was called back. You had 2 touchdowns called back on the same damn play. This is the greatest game ever. And this is before there was an hour-long delay in the fourth quarter with, like, 2 minutes to go. Like, usually a delay is like, you know, it's hardly ever like, boys, we're down to crunch time in a one-score game. You know, it's time to strap it on. Actually, it's time to go sit and eat cheese snacks until... You know,
everybody, everybody snack hard.
Everybody eat some Hardee's because we're about to start the 2 minute drill.
I will never get tired of reading process stories about how teams handle rain delays and like the storming the beaches at Normandy level ops that go into managing the peanut butter and jelly sandwich intake of 100 sweaty young men.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that when West Virginia and Tennessee played, Tennessee did the Saban thing. Nick Saban is famous during rain delays for having an entire rain delay plan about how players can get more information while they get hydrated, and they have, you know, pamphlets that they can read, and their time is well spent.
Thank
and
God,
they're
pamphlets.
constantly coached, and you know, no second is wasted. And Dana Holgorsen for West Virginia was like, "Well, we just got him a bunch of food and kept him happy. And I don't know, he came out and scored 28 points in a quarter."
Makes him sound like sled dogs.
It was basically like, "Yeah, keep these dogs fed and, you know, just tell them to go." That was it. Like, Dana
didn't
worry.
Around, like, rubbing bellies.
Dana was just rubbing bellies and handing people hamburgers. And they're like, "Yeah, I don't know, it worked."
Try not to get too gassy.
Walk around so you don't founder. Yeah, like that's all they did. Nothing about this game makes sense too. Like Drew Lock threw the ball a ton, but they actually did way better running on the ground. Lock didn't have a passing TD.
So
on the day and threw 2 picks. The guy who threw 3 TDs was Michael Scarnecchia, who was the spot starter after they lost Jake Bentley to injury, but they still sent Jake Bentley out to warm-ups because got to keep them guessing, even though Bentley's out there like hobbling.
Yeah,
right.
Carolina was out without Jake Bentley. Mizzou was missing its best receiver and I think another senior starter. And of course, the game went past, you know, the Vegas over under anyway, despite an hour long delay and a monsoon. It ended with Mizzou hit a fucking 57-yard field goal in a swamp.
With no footing, like absolutely no footing.
And it didn't matter because Carolina hit a field goal right after that.
Yeah.
And like, if you look at the box score, it gets even weirder. This was like, it's almost a term if I say a Muschamp game. You know what I mean? Like, South Carolina was probably outgained by more than 100 yards and still won, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, just where like, and even the turnover numbers don't make sense because you go, oh man, Mizzou must have had like 5 turnovers, 2-1.
Yeah, in Bill's weekly stat update, South Carolina beat a good Missouri and fell 17 spots in S&P Plus because they actually the computer took one look at the box score like, wow, South Carolina really got it handed to them. They got outgained by more than a yard per play.
Will Muschamp's unending war on math. It just doesn't end. I do enjoy, though, that Will Muschamp keeps finding himself in situations where basically it's like, hey, you have to cook a turkey. Cool. What do I have? I got an oven and a turkey. They're like, no, we got a pig, two matches, and some wet wood. And he's like, let's go.
Somehow, get you a turkey. Somehow he saves Thanksgiving every year.
Oh my God, he's the great pumpkin.
Just never has quite the same right tools and never uses quite the right sort of techniques. But you're like, man, you made a statue of me out of mashed potatoes with asparagus. It's crazy.
Yeah, it don't look edible, but it is.
Yeah. Will Muschamp is totally my choice for, like, who do you want to be, your post-apocalyptic mechanic? You know, you're like, well, this Ford has a blown compressor and it also needs three wheels. And Will Muschamp's like, I'll get you a motorcycle out of all the parts in 3 hours.
The turkey ain't dead, but you can eat it. It won't kill you.
What are we doing? Winning. We're just getting to the goal. I'm just going to get to the objective. You might hate me when we're done. No, I'm just going to be confused. This is just going to be very confusing.
He's like, yeah, he's like the video game player who just does not give a shit how much damage he takes.
You don't have pants on. That's fine. That's like pants don't help you win.
You complete the mission and the game's immediately like, do you want to try this again? Because we're giving you an F. Hell no. Completed. Next. Just trying to get through story mode as fast as possible.
Every Will Muschamp game is the end of There Will Be Blood, right? I'm finished. Just a man sitting in a bowling alley with a corpse. I made it happen and I did it.
A bowling alley where way fewer than 300 points were scored. I don't think any were, actually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was an absolutely amazing game. I would also like to go ahead and, speaking of anti-football, if you didn't see Utah-Stanford, and you probably didn't. Yeah. Utah's so confusing. They're another team where they just show up to the ball in jeans, and they're just going to make it work. Okay? Ain't got nothing. Like one of the most got-nothing teams around is Utah. And yet, they managed to beat Stanford handily, like, toward the end. Like, it wasn't even close.
Yeah, there was a 99-yard pick six, and then, like, Stanford's next drive, another red zone INT. And you give Utah, basically, that could be a damn 28-point swing right there.
Yeah.
And Utah doesn't need much more than that.
No, they score 13 in the fourth quarter to manage to beat Stanford 40-21. But in fact, Stanford, like, again, did we break math? Kind of. I mean, Utah was at least able to run, right? I would also put the Belichick alert is on Britton Covey, the gritty,
oh yeah,
tiny sort of Caucasian receiver.
He's quite Caucasian.
Sort of,
yeah,
Caucasian.
Sort of
his name is Britton.
His name is Britton. It's hard to be more Caucasian than to be named Britton.
Quail.
Yeah. But Britton Covey and Quail, yeah. Like, zero chance he doesn't end up on the Patriots. Zero. He's such a cerebral player.
Covey sounds a little delicate, I don't know.
He's a leader. He's literally, like, probably part of that Utah Covey family. Mm. Right? The seven habits of successful wide receivers who are under 5'10".
He's an awkward one because he really does fit the stereotype, like gritty, tough, grind, all that stuff. Like, yeah, yeah. This dude gets laid out like every play, and
mostly
because
his quarterback
football.
Can your quarterback make you look tougher? Yeah, if you throw him into traffic,
right with helmets pointed at your ribs.
That guy's like 3 yards from a safety. I should just throw it into him.
The key is to throw it to your 6'5 wide receiver who doesn't exist.
Britton Covey has some grievances with his HR rep.
No, he's just a team player. He's going to make it happen. That's fine. That's fine. I'll catch this in cut into a waiting traffic pole. That's good.
There was one play on Saturday where it was probably just a trick of the light, but you almost felt like you could see his body just go, oh, God damn it, right before.
Just flex
like
with
he
regret.
Put his hands out for the ball and was like, fine.
Yeah. Utah, one of my favorite anti-football teams. By the way, also, Utah had a 300-pound man intercept the ball. One-handed. That's the kind of night Stanford had. In case you wonder if they'd replace the production that Bryce Love had and righted the ship. Nope. They're 4-2 at this point. The Pac-12, they're getting no one in the playoff. Absolutely no one.
Well, what if Washington nope. wins out? They lost to Auburn. So
and they're going to lose again. Like, if you've watched Washington play, if I told you Washington was going to lose again, you'd go, oh, yeah, that's.
If Washington wins out, maybe we cram them into the Outback Bowl so they can get a rematch against Auburn.
Oof. That assumes Auburn's bowl eligible at the end
of the year. Outback was a little generous. Let's go Belk. Shout out to the Belk Bowl, by the way.
Yeah.
The bowl that's not ashamed to admit it listens to us.
Yeah. Or the Music City Bowl as well. Home of the Kentucky Wildcats, who so unfairly lost to Texas A&M 20-14. Thus ending the dream of an undefeated Kentucky season.
Can we talk about the other Kentucky team?
I would love to.
Oh, this is gonna hurt.
No, this is great. Phenomenal.
I wasn't talking about you.
Oh, yeah, that Paul Johnson decided to drop the hammer after 12 years of nursing a grudge. 12 years.
Paul Johnson's everlasting pettiness gobstopper against Brian Van Gorder. Jason, you've got some feelings on Brian Van Gorder. Would you like to speak on this?
Man, this dude has had every single job in the state of Georgia. So
all of them. Yeah, like all of them.
Yeah. So for anyone who isn't caught up, Paul Johnson, of course, was one of the prime architects of Georgia Southern's FCS dynasty. Call it 1AA if you like to pretend you're old school and you can't remember what they call it these days. Let's just call it FCS. And also the forefather of the modern triple option offense. So when he leaves and Brian Van Gorder takes over as head coach at Georgia Southern and makes a commercial where he says, there is no option. And he means that literally. They don't run the option anymore, and he gets his ass run out of town because they only run 3 games. Meanwhile, Paul Johnson at Navy calls up Georgia Southern and says, we are going to play you because I want to beat the hell out of Brian Van Gorder. Doesn't get to do that.
Can I point out, by the way, actually kind of a mild thing to say, I'd rather do things my way. That's really all Brian Van Gorder is saying here.
I don't know, but he did it in kind of a prickish way. Like, he said, to hell with the option.
Disparaging the scheme as though it had not been effective.
I would actually prefer to do things this way.
And this new dude comes in and says, like, no option.
It wasn't like Paul Johnson got fired because it wasn't working, and then Van Gorder came and disparaged it.
Well, yeah, but it's not like he's walking into Paul Johnson's house and like, yeah, I'll take a beer. Your daughter's looking great.
That's
no, I mean,
exactly like Brian Van Gorder.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of did. Look at that mustache. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, this is at best a gentle diss. And Paul Johnson's like, I will call down the thunder of the ancestors.
the best part is, Van Gorder as Louisville defensive coordinator, yes. Paul Johnson's team dumped 542 rushing yards on that ass. Let's go back 2 years ago. The University of Georgia, right before they were about to play Georgia Tech, they brought in an outside consultant to help him figure out how to solve this triple option riddle.
Why wasn't he busy?
He'd been at Notre Dame, and then he was no longer at Notre Dame.
Weird.
So they brought in an expert who had shut down the option before. Of course, he'd shut it down because he was the head coach of a team that ran the option, and he decided they'd rather not score points. So let's bring in Brian Van Gorder. He'll show us the tricks. He'll beat that Paul Johnson for Georgia Tech beat Georgia that year.
I would
Paul Johnson is just going to haunt Van Gorder all around the country and continue beating his ass for the rest of his life.
12 years.
Because 12 years ago, he switched a scheme.
12 years ago, he was like, yeah, I'd rather do things differently. Hell with you!
A man in 2006 said, we're going to try throwing the ball.
My favorite part of this game on Saturday was at one point when Georgia Tech was given a sideline warning, and the camera cuts immediately to Paul Johnson and two of his players guffawing openly at having been given a sideline penalty.
I do enjoy, if you watch Georgia Tech from now and then, every now and then, there is a different kind of Paul Johnson that emerges in big games where he knows he's pulled off some bullshit. It's called the cops, Paul. As in, I don't care if you call him. I'll talk to him. We can all talk to the cops, can't we? I don't care.
Also, you know, he's a famous curmudgeon. He's a famous curmudgeon who looks like he really, who doesn't bother to do that Penny Ante James Franklin shit where you act like you don't enjoy beating the shit out of people every once in a while because you're like a gentleman. No. No, Paul Johnson will savor this. He will savor it openly. He will giggle with his players about it on the sideline. Anyway, I ride for Paul Johnson, who is a famous curmudgeon whose players love him.
I would also.
My favorite post-game quote from him.
It is so obvious
him.
How much they love playing for him, which is always fun to see.
After this game, someone asked him, like, you know, Coach, how did you put up so many damn points? And he said, just running the offense.
That's
just running the offense. That piece of shit discard. He didn't say that part.
The cruelty involved here is that when you are down to a triple option team, the way to shorten the game is to run the ball. Let's just get out of here, boys, by doing exactly what got us up 28.
Before, I remember there was a game like 5 or 6 years ago where Tech was like driving for a touchdown in the closing minutes. And they asked him about it, and he was like, literally, what do you want me to do? We don't have any other offense. Tech's going to start throwing to show mercy.
And the last note on this, just in case this wasn't all hilarious and happening against Brian Van Gorder and against Bobby, against the shell of Bobby Petrino.
It's a husk. He's molted.
Yeah. Georgia Tech coming into the game. 2-3.
2-3 and with boosters finally deciding.
You know, that he's done.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy him out. Gonna get this done.
They've been trying to buy him out for years, and they can never. The other thing I love about Georgia Tech is they can never gin up enough money to make huge changes when they get mad. So they just have to sit there and be mad, which I think Paul probably also appreciates.
I think you know
what's
coming. Is
it that, or is it like social awkwardness? Like, like they're just kind of scared of him.
We could send him an email. Coach doesn't use email.
I got a doctor here in town who has been mad for like 5 years. He was like a disgruntled Georgia Tech booster who'd been mad at Paul Johnson for like 5 years. And they're never going to get enough people mad at the same time to pull this off.
5-game winning streak coming. That's
how would you even fire Paul Johnson? He's just going to go in the walls.
Where is he?
Do you know how long he can survive above a drop ceiling?
He'll come out in spring. We'll have to wait till then. We can't even send him an email or a text. He doesn't have a phone.
We just got to get him somewhere more Appalachian, I think.
Yeah.
Like it's cool and all. And, like, I'd love to keep him in a power conference. Just, I don't know. I don't know about him in a big city.
I think he, you know where he needs to go?
North Carolina.
I think he needs to just work as a consultant for Kennesaw State. Expand Plankonia. They already run his offense.
Yeah, we're already the offshoot, which is so weird, like, not to keep talking about FCS flexbone teams,
should
but
keep
like
talking about Georgia's finest football team.
It is weird every time there's like a coaching carousel season. It's like, yeah, we're the coach, we are the number two team, but our coach has literally nowhere to go. Like, is Army hiring? No. Okay, we're good. But
I think Paul ought to keep it in conference to take over for Lurie Fuduri.
Go to UNC.
Yeah, why not?
What about let's say Dana moves on. Let's get the Flexbone in the Big 12. How about that?
Whoa.
Y'all like to score points? So do we, but only one way.
I think we've already seen it works based on recent results in Norman. Then again, everything works there as we open the show discussion.
Not Mike Stoops, not anymore.
Woo!
Oh.